B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Gasper and Murray here on 98.5, a Sports Hub. Full 3 hours today. Sports Hub Celtics show at noon. We're both actually here, even though we kind of don't want to be. We were just bitching before the show even started. I mean, look, it's a transparent show. I at least try to make it be a transparent show, so I should let the people know. But it could be worse, Chris. How happy are you? You see what's going on in the Midwest? There has to be a part of you that's happy that the Patriots aren't in Kansas City and that you're not covering the AFC Championship game because it is a snowy nightmare. A buddy of mine who actually works for a Tennessee station, Nashville station, who's covering the Tennessee Titans, it's been planes, trains, and automobiles, him trying to get to Kansas City over the last, like, 48 hours.
From Nashville,
it's been
a complete
nightmare.
Really?
Yeah, so you got to be happy. It could be worse.
Well, I mean, if the Patriots had won, they would have gone out there last week to play Kansas City.
Oh, right. Yeah, duh.
Yeah, so there's no way that really could have happened.
That's
but
right.
I will
I'm
say,
an
based on last year's experience of covering the AFC Championship game at Arrowhead, great stadium, but, oh, man, Kansas City is impossible to get to. Last year, I had flights canceled. I had to fly to Denver and then fly back to Kansas City. And then on the way back, my flight from Chicago got canceled. So I feel your buddy's pain. It's a really difficult place to get to and get back from. I don't know why, but it just is.
Oh, those mid-market Midwest cities it's all the same. There's usually only one airline that has one direct flight. Otherwise, it's you got to fly to Charlotte to get to Kansas City.
It's
like Chicago, Detroit. Those are your hubs, and outside of that, like, good luck trying to get anywhere
there.
Yeah.
Thank you, airline consolidation.
All right, so enough of our bitching here. We are here. The people do need their sports. And it's actually been, I thought, an exciting week, especially considering if you told me a week ago today saying, hey, Jim, you know, heading into next week on Felger and Mez, you guys are going to have to talk a lot of baseball. You told me that going into it, it's like, okay, I got to find an excuse so I can bang out, like, fake sick. We're going to be talking baseball in the middle of January. Are you kidding me? Like, we can't come up with something else, but boy, that sport is doing its best to implode and eat itself, and I love it, especially when it comes to the Red Sox, because I'm now one of these people. There's definitely a group of these people, and I'm one of them that just – without trying to get you in trouble, Chris, like I mostly despise the Red Sox ownership. I find them obtuse. I find them arrogant. I find them unwilling to, be transparent. Like I try to make this show, and I think that was proven again with that worthless press conference midweek where they dodged basically Cora's firing again because that's what it was, with this spineless sentence that was uttered time and time again: a mutual agreement to part ways. They just can't ever give it to you straight. It's a firing. Everything with these jellyfish is always PR spin. So they don't end up looking like the bad guy. They can't own it. It always ends up being handled poorly and lacking transparency. And I've had it with them. I really have. And until they're gone, they're a tough sell for me. They really are. And I don't like a lot of the players on the team either. There was an organizational arrogance I don't like about the Red Sox. So them eating the big pile of crap this week, I've rather enjoyed it. And the thing that kind of surprised me, considering you get a paycheck from the owner of the Globe and the Red Sox, seems like you kind of feel the same way because you went in on them this week, and I was like, I read your first column after the press conference. I was like, oh, Chris trying to get fired.
No, let's be clear. I was not trying to get fired, but I still have a responsibility to tell it like it is, and I just thought that press conference was painful. It was difficult to sit through. There weren't a lot of answers. There weren't a lot of details. I do agree with you. While I disagree with you on sort of, you know, overall, the way you're characterizing the ownership, I will say this. I totally agree with the idea that it seems like whenever they dismiss someone, they can't own up to it. Whether it's Terry Francona or Ben Cherington or Dave Dombrowski or John Farrell or Alex Cora. I mean, if you're not going to say you fired somebody for impermissible sign stealing, even if you want to say, you know, it was just what happened in Houston, you could, I'll give you that. I mean, I don't believe it, but I'll give it to you. Okay, we fired him because of the impermissible sign stealing he was engaged in Houston, which we weren't aware of before we hired him. No problem. But instead, you know, mutually agreed to part. And the part that got to me was the idea of trying to somehow paint Cora as some sort of martyr, some sort of hero who fell on his sword for the good of the organization. Give me a break. That's not what happened. And really, the only choice they could make was to move on from him. So it really wasn't up to Alex Cora. you know, maybe Court came in there and said, hey, you know, this is an untenable situation. I know I can't be here. I know you guys got to do what you got to do. But it's not mutual. I'm sorry. There's no, I mean, you know, it's the same thing. It's like when you break up with somebody, like people will say it's mutual. It was always initiated by someone. It's never mutual.
Someone wins, someone loses.
Correct.
That's just how life works.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so mealy mouthed. I hated how they handled that, but I wasn't that surprised either. But overall, just in terms of baseball and yeah. how this whole thing has imploded.
Yeah.
Even I'm surprised. Like, the sport can win me back if they speed it up, if there is reform. And maybe, and I'm trying to look at the bright side of this, based on, you know, some of the bitching back and forth between some of the players and players at mentioning MLB.
Yep.
And what has really transpired here over the last few days, there's part of me that's looking at this with a silver lining, Chris, and that's, and you know, Maz has lost his mind, and he told the sport to die and go F itself yesterday, which
I know, that was amazing coming from Maz.
Yeah, and that's, and I understand his frustration, but the silver lining to me is, I see hate again. I see... Because everyone's become too chummy, and everyone all has the same, like, six or seven agents. And there's one of the things I loved growing up about baseball. I mean, you had legitimate hate. You had Fair. Hate between the Yankees and the Red Sox. Hell, even 15, 16 years ago. All that's gone away. This, you might get actual hate and anger back in baseball. You might get guys trying to drill each other. Oh, I think you're cheating, F you. Like, that kind of thing could be brought back. That's one of the things I think could be a benefit from this whole situation, as I think we are going to see reform. But even I'm surprised at how much has transpired so quickly. Three managers fired, guys bitching back and forth. They have a real problem on their hands, and pitchers and catchers have to report in what, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
It's
crazy.
It's interesting. I was having this conversation with McTakey, Matt McCarthy, after Felger and Maz yesterday, because he was coming in. And he brought up a really good point, I thought, which was that in a way, this is good for baseball because people are talking about
it's true.
Baseball the week of the conference championship games in the NFL. And it's interesting, and I'll take it a step further from my standpoint. It's now this sort of replaces another like boring, dormant offseason. It was a little better this offseason. Obviously, Gerrit Cole going to the Yankees. There were some major moves there. But still, it had been pretty quiet. I mean, Lindor not traded, Nolan Arenado not traded. Obviously, we've dealt here with Mookie Betts. That had really quieted down, not traded. So there hadn't been these like major transactions to get excited about. But now you can get, I don't want to say excited, but at least you're emotionally invested now in this MLB scandal. So at least they're getting some level of emotional investment in MLB this time of year. Which, since this new CBA basically killed free agency and it's a nuclear winter every offseason, you weren't getting. At least that's back for MLB. And I think it's really interesting here. And I wrote a column today in the Globe. Just I've written three columns this week about this scandal. It's really interesting.
Hey, but firing them off.
Firing them off. But to your point, it's interesting to me that I think there are a lot of players who want to see other players get punished for this. And you have to remember, where did this all start? It started with a player, Mike Fiers, former pitcher for the Astros, now with the Oakland A's. It started with him basically being the whistleblower on what the Astros were doing. And so I find it hard to believe, and you know, a lot of people have sort of been defending, and Maz was yesterday, well, you know, the players, it's not going to do anything if you punish the players. I think it's the total opposite. I think if you really want to root out this electronic sign stealing, you have to punish the players. And I think it's the one area where Rob Manfred has fallen really short, and his explanation sounded like that Red Sox press conference, if you read his statement, where he's basically saying, well, you know, there's so many people involved and I can't ascertain like what the level of involvement was for everyone. So, you know, it's really hard to punish them properly. So basically the translation is, you know, there's so many people involved with this impermissible sign stealing and doing bad things and wrongdoing here. So many people are involved that I can't figure it out, so I'm just not going to punish anyone. Does that make any sense?
No, it doesn't.
Is that any sort of deterrent moving forward for a player? Great player. Because forget, if I'm a player, Jim, and I'm engaged in this, and by the way, in that statement that Rob Manfred put out to summarize the MLB investigation, he points out that with the exception of Cora, this was a player-driven and player-executed scheme by the Astros. Player-driven and player-executed. Okay, so it's with the players.
Well, Carlos Beltran is proof of that anyway.
Totally. So if I'm a player, and all these managers are getting fired, we decide we're going to steal signs because we can win more games and I can hit five more home runs and cash in an arbitration. Do I give a crap about the manager's job security? No, I don't care. Fire him. That's fine. I'll take my extra $5 million a year in my next five-year deal. No way. That's not a deterrent for me, firing managers and GMs. Could care less if I'm going to cash in and win more games and get paid more money by doing this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The players are definitely skating in this, and it feels like they should be involved too, because there's no way that they weren't involved. Again, Carlos Beltran, just based on that 9-page report that came out on Houston earlier this week, just proves the players knew what was going on, and there hasn't been enough punishment. There's not going to be enough deterrent. The only thing you can hope for, that I'm hoping for, that I am seeing already on social media, is that they eat themselves. They're just bitching back and forth. It's getting real catty. Have you seen some of the stuff that Mike Clevenger has put out? Oh, like he
it's
is.
Great.
Yeah, between him, Cody Bellinger, who feels like they're ripped off, CeCe Sabathia with the Yankees. Like, players are hot. Again, this is the most exciting and the most buzz that baseball has had in years. So I've enjoyed it. Again, you've told me last week, like, Jim, you're going to have to talk baseball most of the week, huh? Oh, God. I have the flu, Felger. Yeah, wink, wink. Yeah. But no, this has been
juicy.
It's been real juicy. So anything you didn't get to talk about this week with this scandal, we'd like to hear from you at 617-779-0985. I've enjoyed it. I'm sure unemployed managers have enjoyed it too. Guys that probably thought they were done. Dusty Baker, maybe Ron Washington. Some of these guys that haven't had work for a little while. Now their phone
Buck
is
Showalters.
Ringing. Yeah, Buck Showalter. You got three open jobs now with the Mets, the Astros, and here with the Red Sox. The other thing, too, the other thing that bugged me from the press conference, now that I'm just reminded of it, is the please reserve judgment. Reserve judgment. They kept asking, please reserve judgment. No, I'm not going to reserve judgment. And by the way, once the report comes back, and if it looks like the Red Sox are squeaky clean outside of Alex Cora, it's going to reek of a cover-up, at least to me. I mean, come on. Like, Alex Cora was the true mastermind and the only one behind it. No one above him knew about it. No. Like, it's almost an impossibility, especially if you're using video equipment. Some other people knew.
Well, here's an interesting point, and I will credit this one to Jimmy Stewart. He brought up this point. I think it was Jimmy. It might have been McTakey. But one of them brought up the point that Dave Dombrowski's skating on this, because if you look at it, Dave Dombrowski, former president of baseball operations for the Red Sox, he had two instances or allegations of sign stealing under two different managers. So you mean to tell me he didn't know what was going on?
Right. Please. Yeah, from the Apple Watch to this. Yeah.
Because 2018, he's still there, you know, with that World Series winner for the Sox. So the Apple Watch thing, the number four under Farrell in 2017, in 2018 with Cora. So he had no idea. Well, seems it just does not seem plausible.
No, it doesn't add up, but what good would it do him to even talk about it or even come back and answer any questions about it, because it might taint his legacy with that championship a little bit, you know what I mean? So he's better off just walking off into the sunset and, you know, diving into a big pile of money, which I'm sure that he has at this point. But boy, exciting times here. It's like the old days too with the Red Sox. Having been born and raised here, Chris, doesn't it kind of warm your heart a little bit seeing the chaos around this team again? My whole life, there's always been some chaos waiting around the corner with the Red Sox, whether it was Wade Boggs, Margot Adams, yeah, the 25 guys, 25 cabs.
Roger Clemens with the headphones in, listening to Butch Hobson.
Yeah, from that to, you know, to cheating scandals now. And
Nomar getting traded but not getting traded to the White Sox and then being pissed.
Theo in the stupid suit, you know, trying to leave Fenway Park. There's always something right around
Manny
the corner with the Red Sox.
Grandparents.
Yeah. Pedro showing up late. Pedro being pissed but still loving Pedro because he's the best pitcher of all time.
Yeah.
It's like the old days, bitching about the Red Sox because they're embroiled in
Josh Beckett playing golf.
In a big cheating scandal. Alex Cora fired, not a mutual agreement. So your thoughts on this? It's been a very exciting week, I think, for baseball, which I haven't been able to say those words in quite some time. 617-779-0985. We won't be all on this today. I want to get your thoughts on championship weekend, Chris, some predictions for the Super Bowl, who has the most to gain, the most to lose this weekend with those games. Sure, it sucks the Patriots aren't here, but I'm still excited for them. And as much as I bitched about the divisional games last week, too, I ended up enjoying them. Who saw the Titans going into Baltimore and kicking their ass like they did last Saturday night? Not many people. All right, it's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Alex came to the conclusion that he could not effectively lead the organization going forward in light of the commissioner's findings and the ruling. And we came to that conclusion as well.
Please. That's Sam Kennedy, the Red Sox, Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Chris, are the titles tainted, and maybe one more than the other, like the 2017 Astros World Series Championship over the Dodgers? Does that deserve an asterisk? Should Major League Baseball vacate it? Would that solve anything? Do you look at those both differently now in light of everything that's come out this week?
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
Are the titles tainted?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, definitely the Astros one is. There's no question about that in my mind. I mean, what they were doing, it just seems like they took it a step too far with the electronic sign stealing. And from a Red Sox standpoint, if Cora's your manager, and Cora's like the only person who's really sort of singled out other than the players in the MLB report, and he's the common link between these two clubs. Now, the Red Sox are just being investigated. It's only allegations. But those allegations through The Athletic came from former members of their organization, which I think is something that kind of gets lost, Jim. Like, there's a lot of like, oh, you know, they haven't been punished. It's still being investigated. It's allegedly. Yeah, that's all true. But what the investigation is based on is a story that cited anonymously former members of their own organization detailing how they were doing what they were doing, which mirrors almost exactly one of the sign-stealing measures that was happening in Houston. Now, it's not the one with the banging of the trash cans. They advanced to that. But before that, as MLB lays out, Cora is masterminding a scheme as the bench coach in Houston where they're using the center field camera and they're using the replay review room to steal signs. That's what the Red Sox are accused of. So you're telling me that's just a coincidence? When he's their manager?
Oh, please.
I mean, come right. on.
I'm putting asterisks on him. Yeah. And I think if you're going to hurt the ownership by, like, forcing them to take the banners down, like, you know that would piss them off and make them crazy. So, yeah, I'm all for that. But in terms of, like, vacating, it's not going to happen. But even so, even if it did, people ignore that. Like, I mean, what happened with UMass in 96, just because the NCAA vacated it didn't mean it didn't happen. It happened. Same with Louisville or any other teams that have had things vacated in the NCAA throughout my life and your life as well. It still happened. I watched it with my own eyes. So, you know, put an asterisk on it, say it's vacated, take the banners down, whatever. It still happened. They still won the championship. But tainted? Oh, for sure it's tainted. 108
wins. The only way to me the Red Sox won, and tainted is interesting in terms of how you characterize that, but there's no way you can say that it's not going to be tainted in the court of public opinion unless they get complete and utter exculpation from MLB in this investigation, unless that happens. You know, so, I mean, we can argue semantics about whether it's tainted or not, and all these other teams are doing it, and everybody was doing it, and all this other stuff. But when you break down tainted, to me, that means when you ask somebody about this on the street, do they feel differently about it than another championship? Will they reference it in a negative way? They will. So in the court of public opinion, the Red Sox were already there in terms of it being tainted.
Sure. All right, let's go to you. Steve in New Hampshire, first up on Casper Murray this morning. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how you doing today, guys?
Good, what's up?
Good, what's up,
hey,
Steve?
Hey, Chris, my question is, with all the players being named in the report and Manfred saying he can't punish them because there's just too many, can't he just institute a 5-game ban for any player at all mentioned in the report to show everybody that he's serious about trying to clean things up?
I mean, he could. I think the issue here is that really baseball kind of wants to bury this quickly, Jim. And also, I think he does not want to fight the MLBPA. And that's why I think it's incumbent upon the MLB Players Association not to make the same mistake here that they made during the steroid era, which was to be obstructionist and obtuse during this whole thing and just so preoccupied with protecting players who had violated the rules that really it affected the integrity of the game. And you see a number of players speaking up. I thought Alex Wood had a really interesting tweet, the pitcher for the Dodgers, basically saying, I would much rather face somebody on steroids than who knows what pitch is coming. And so I think it's up to Tony Clark and the MLBPA to talk to MLB and talk to their membership, the rank and file players, and say, hey, we want some guys to be subject to punishment here. Now, we don't want the punishment to be crazy and outlandish, but we want some guys to be subject to punishment. I think Manfred is afraid of poking the MLBPA, knowing that they're a year out from another CBA negotiation, which I think is going to be difficult because the MLBPA and the players know they signed a bad deal last time. So he doesn't want to poke the bear with the MLBPA, and he doesn't want to in any way galvanize the MLBPA. But I think if he were to talk to Tony Clark and talk to those players, I think Manfred would be surprised at the amount of players in the union that would support punishment for other players involved in this.
With the Red Sox and how this is all unfolding, and once they find a manager and name one, are they better served to essentially like go all in now, at least for this year? You know, you always say that winning is the best deodorant.
Yeah.
And so should they not look to trade Mookie Betts, even if they know he's not going to re-sign? Should they go all in, you know, and screw the luxury tax and you know, we now need a winning product on the field, so we're actually going to spend
money. That's a really interesting point. I hadn't thought of it from that standpoint, Jim, but it would make a lot of sense. Imagine if this scandal actually helps you as a Red Sox fan because they're more committed to putting a winning team on the field. And I think they wanted to put a winning team on the field anyway this year, but the salary concerns were real, and there was sort of a balancing act there. What if they abandoned the balancing act and, to your point, say, you know what, from a PR standpoint, we can't move anybody, can't move Price, can't move Betts. We need to just go in guns a-blazing and damn the torpedoes and go out there and try and win. That would actually be, I think, a positive development if you're a Red Sox fan from this scandal.
I wouldn't blame them one bit.
Neither would I.
They should do that, I would think. I mean, I think it would be a really bad look, and you would really alienate a portion of your fan base at this point, especially those that are, you know, going to be pious about it and be like, oh, think about the children and cheating. And like, all right, shut up. But if you feel that way, and then they go out there and they're a dumpster fire on the field and they trade Betts at the trade deadline, like, ugh, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
it could get ugly fast.
There's a certain section of the fan base that you might not get back if it gets real ugly, like 2012 type ugly. You're right.
I think that's a really good point, and that's a way it could benefit them. They're also so far down the road, I think. I mean, you're less than a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting. Do you want to move Mookie Betts at this point? And even if you're keeping Mookie Betts, does it make sense to pair the payroll or the roster around him?
Well, probably not.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you make the commitment to keep Betts, that's clearly sort of like a win now move.
Sure.
So why would you make the roster around him weaker by trying to get under the CBT by trading someone like Price?
Yeah, no, they're better served to go all in. Yeah. They probably should. Howard and Randolph, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Howard.
How you doing, guys?
Good. What's up?
Good.
Chris, great article this morning.
Thank you.
I just had like three quick questions, and I'll listen for your answers. This guy, Mike Fiers, that blew the whistle, he was on the team, and he won the World Series as a member of the team. When did he leave the Astros, and what was his motivation for coming for talking about it, and why did he go to the paper instead of going to MLB?
Thanks, Howard. This is Mike Fiers, who's the whistleblower with the Astros. I don't know. Maybe he had some sort of axe to grind. It's like these unnamed players with the Red Sox that have talked to Evan Drellick. I mean, I'm just speculating, but think about some of the Red Sox players here in recent years that would maybe have an axe to grind. Someone like Steven Wright or Craig Kimbrel.
Sure.
Someone like that. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if it was one of those two. In Fiers' case, I don't know.
I don't know. I'd have to look into it. But the one thing I will say there is that you have to remember he's on the Oakland A's. So they're competing with the Astros. So now he's in a – it's kind of, to me, analogous in some ways to the Eric Mangini Spygate thing. And who knows if, like Eric – if Fiers told the Astros to kind of knock it off, or I know what you're doing, or whatever. But it's kind of like that. You're on a team. You know what they're doing. Now all of a sudden you're competing with that team, and you know what they're capable of, and you know how they're capable of potentially gaining an advantage, and you want to make sure it's not happening to you and it's not happening to your current team, which you're more invested in at this point. So, you know, I don't know the background there with Fiers in terms of why he would have done this. And you can make the case of going to MLB and doing it that way. But by MLB's own admission, you know, they basically said in this summary by Manfred that if it were not for the reporting of The Athletic, maybe Fiers had said something to MLB and it had gotten buried. I mean, even if you go to MLB, do you think they want to make this big a deal out
of it? No, God, no.
The Athletic stories forced their hand.
And everything on the internet is what, you know, all the videos on Twitter from John Boy that exposed, you know, the trash can thing with the Astros. Like, all of that. You have to thank, you know, social media and those articles from Drellick and Rosenthal for this really coming to light and baseball having to deal with it. Because, you know, you read some of these articles, and based on some of the dealings behind the scenes, Manfred wanted this thing swept under the rug. He didn't want it to become what it's become in just this week. God, no.
So just quickly on Fiers, the Astros traded him. They traded him during the 2018 season to I'm wrong about that. He was traded by the Tigers to the Athletics. He signed as a free agent. After the 17 season, he signed as a free agent with the Detroit Tigers.
Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe he was expecting more of an offer from the Astros. I have no idea there. I don't know.
Always anytime anyone ends up being a whistleblower, they're burned somehow. And they're burned either with money by the company or, you know, a teammate, coworker, or something like that. Or it has something to do with a woman. And maybe, you know, someone took his girlfriend or wife to Pound Town. It's like there's some.
I like this version of the story.
Oh, no. It always, Chris, in every aspect of life, anytime you have a whistleblower, it's not usually out of the goodness of their heart. It's because someone got burned and they're pissed off. So what it is, I don't know. But if I had to speculate, it's probably has to deal with money or women. We'll continue to take your calls on the baseball cheating scandal, 617-779-0985. And, Chris, I want to know if you have an idea of who the Red Sox next manager should be, because the clock is ticking. Again, pitchers and catchers in what, like 3 weeks, 2 weeks? The truck is going to be leaving right on Super Bowl Sunday or the day after, like it always does. So they better hurry up. So your thoughts on that. And, again, you want to join us, 617-779-0985. It's Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
We had a system in Old Comiskey Park in the late 80s. Gatorade sign out in right center had a light. There was a toggle switch in the manager's office and a camera zoomed in on the catcher. Okay? I'm going to whistle blow this now because I'm getting tired of this crap. There's that. There was that. Tony La Russa is the one who put it in. He was also the head, the first team of all the teams of people doing steroids. Yet he's still in the game making $500,000. You know, no one's going to go after that. It's just the stuff's getting old where they target certain guys and let other people off the hook. And, you know, like the media doesn't know that this all happened, what's going on. Everybody knows. Everybody who's been around the game knows all this stuff. Why all of a sudden it became a big thing, I have no idea.
Oh, tainted sports. I love it. I mean, all these rats.
Tainted sports.
That's Jack McDowell, Black Jack McDowell, former Cy Young Award winner on the Mac Attack on WFNZ in Charlotte this week, throwing Tony La Russa under the bus for a sign-stealing system he had with the White Sox in the 80s. Give me all of this. Burn, burn, burn. Yes, you're going to burn. Yeah, like, because I do think, I mean it, Chris, I think there's a silver lining coming from this. Like, all the hate and anger could be back in baseball because you got all this bitchiness going on. One thing, though, I'm convinced with the way how this has been handled and how it's just really quickly gotten hush hush in terms of Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred. Like, they're just trying to sweep this thing under the rug and get out of it as quickly as damn possible.
You're right. And I think that's one of the reasons we haven't seen player discipline, because I think, again, as I said before, player discipline would be challenged by the MLB Players Association, and that would drag on, and it would drag on into the season. And it would become a bigger topic and talking point, and it would overshadow the games. MLB wants people to forget about this, and they want to move on.
Yeah.
And that's more important to them than actually rooting out impermissible electronic sign stealing.
The goal was to handle everything in-house, just like how Rob Manfred and the Red Sox and the corrupt cops in the Dominican Republic are doing with the David Ortiz thing. Do we found the shooter yet? Have they made any, like, you know, do we have more answers there? No, and we never will. So who should be the next manager? You know, all these retreads are being talked about now, whether it's Dusty Baker, Buck Showalter. Is there a name in mind, or should they go in-house?
It's interesting. I think that at the end of the day, they will end up, this is just my opinion, I think they will end up with someone we really haven't heard of who's like a minor league manager, and someone who will be sort of a system manager who will listen to the analytics people, listen to Chaim Bloom. I think that's what we'll end up with. What should we end up with? I would like somebody like Adrian Beltre or Mike Lowell, you know, sort of go the ex-player route, still pretty close to his playing days, can communicate to the players. Because I've said for a while, Jim, that when it comes to managing in baseball, particularly in this market, I think it's a lot less about the strategy and a lot more about being able to manage personalities and to be able to put out fires and to get the best out of people. I think that's what Terry Francona did very well. I think Alex Cora was excellent at that. I think John Farrell at times struggled with that. So when Xander Bogaerts is asked about who he wants the manager to be, and he says, you know, well, you know, someone like Cora, to me, the real translation is someone who's definitely not like Farrell. So I think they need to find somebody who is able to deal with and connect with players first and foremost. And the rest of it, they'll just hand him a spreadsheet that says what to do in the seventh inning.
I saw Michael Hawley on NBC Sports Boston on BST this week say a name I hadn't heard. And then I was like, you know what? I'd be into this too. Ozzie Guillen. Bit of a red ass.
I don't think that would work.
Would relate with the Latin players. I think that's obviously still important.
No, Ozzie's a good man, but I think Ozzie's a little too... Ozzie Guillen, to me, is probably a little too close to Bobby Valentine in that he makes it...
About him?
About him.
Okay.
About him, and there's just too much chaos there.
Yeah, selfishly, I want the chaos, though. I'm telling you right now, like, it's for the show and, like, for talking points. I'll tell you right, it's one of the reasons I want Buck Showalter. He's a red ass. But anyway, look at the job he did with the Orioles.
He did a great job.
In the, well, the first part.
Except for not putting Zach Britton in that playoff game.
Right, but the first part of last decade, like, I think you can make the case there's years he overachieved with that
team. He did, but he also, remember, I mean, one of the reasons he was sort of out in Baltimore is they changed their model there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He had more influence and say and personnel than your average manager, kind of like Mike Socha did with the Angels, and now Mike Socha is no longer there. So, I mean, that's where it's – I think you're going to end up with a Bob Melvin type, you know, somebody who's good at managing personnel, he's good at relating to players, and is a good conduit between the analytics people and the sabermetricians in the front office and the players.
Let's go to JP in Providence. You're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, JP.
You're going to get a technocrat, basically, as your manager.
Hello.
Murray. Gaspar, good morning.
Hey.
Gaspar, did you drop an Andy Dufresne obtuse reference? I love it.
Not intentionally. I can't take credit for that.
Oh, thank you. Hey, can I ask a fun question before I get to my GM point?
Sure.
Do we go with Tainted Love, or I saw the sign by Ace of Base instead of Sweet Caroline in the seventh inning right now?
Oh, I like
my
that.
God.
I like I saw the
yeah.
sign.
I stole the sign.
Yeah, and Ace of Base. I love it. You know what? This is great for baseball, though. It's keeping them in the news instead of the playoffs for football. People are talking baseball. So I'm watching Bloom for the first time on TV last night at that Balloon Love Fest kickoff, you
yeah.
know, thing that I'm watching. He looks like Theo 2.0, but he looks like a deer in the headlights, like, oh, my God, what did I get into, versus someone that's tough and seasoned. So I hope he doesn't get eaten alive. But I like the Mike Lowell pick. I like a guy like that that was a grizzled, hardcore kind of a player, but fair, not known for cheating, played hard even though he was hurt. But I got one for you that I told Jones last week. Dennis Eckersley comes out of the booth just for controversy. It would be awesome there.
Yeah, JP, with the bitching that would go, well, not on his case, but David Price, you know, would hate that, and I would like that for that. But why would Dennis Eckersley ever leave the booth in that cushy gig he has? And I love hearing him anyway. I've learned stuff listening to Dennis Eckersley. We all do. Why would he want to be the manager? Any of the players, though, he mentioned Mike Lowell. Obviously, people throw around Jason Varitek. Dustin Pedroia's name was thrown around, but that was quickly snuffed out by John Tomasi. Who I believe it was Sam Kennedy that talked to him, you know, when they did like their one-offs after the press conference midweek. He was like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. Does that interest you at all?
I mean, I would be okay with Varitek. I think he sort of tracks along the lines of a lot of the managers you're seeing today in Major League Baseball. You know, Kevin Cash is the manager in Tampa Bay, and I think there's obviously some similarities there. Cash, a catcher, Varitek, an accomplished catcher, a better player really than Cash ever was. Varitek's been around the team. He's known as a cerebral guy, not that far away from his playing career. I'd be okay with that. I mean, I feel like there's a little too much push for him right now based on his popularity as a player. But if that's ultimately the guy they ended up installing, I wouldn't be mad. I mean, let's be real about it. You know, they're in a bad spot here.
Yeah.
This is not the greatest time to be searching for a manager less than a month before pitchers and catchers report. So you kind of have to take what you can get. And honestly, I wouldn't be mad at them if they just took somebody who's already on the staff, like Ron Renneke, and just said interim manager for a year. I wouldn't be mad at them for that, to be honest.
We stole the signs. 2018 was fake. We stole the signs. We were cheating. Yeah, that's what we need over Sweet Caroline from now on. Play that song.
Well, you already had an asterisk on that season, right? But then did you take it off? What happened?
On the regular season, because some of those wins were completely fake. The 108 wins, some of those were garbage. It was like the Brock Holt hitting for the cycle game. Like, please. So now it's true. Now you can't erase it, people. There really is an asterisk all over that season and the postseason and the title. Suck on that, Sox fans. Chris in the car, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. Murray, as one of the worst-time callers way back in the day, you put it on the radio, and I screwed up this week again. But I wanted, why I called him was the owner's responsibility. And I feel like, right, they wanted to sweep it under the rug. Like you said, I just felt like this whole thing was garbola, almost like steroids. And what's the worst, steroid era or cheating era? Guys, thanks, guys.
You never really get me to say a bad word about the steroid era because I truly enjoyed that. Now I think it's people want to act all bougie about that time. Be like, oh, please, I didn't. I always use this parallel.
Okay.
People look at the late 90s and say, oh, please, the steroid era, though, that was terrible for baseball. Just like you say,
Oh, please, Limp Bizkit. I didn't listen to them. Everyone listened to Limp Bizkit, and you enjoyed the butt rock era. We all did, admit it. And you enjoyed the steroid era. We all did. Baseball was not just the national pastime. They were breaking into the national news. I remember Dan Rather breaking in when McGuire surpassed Babe Ruth's home run record. Like, it was
Roger Maris's home run record.
It was the biggest story. Everyone was engaged in it. Everyone loved it. And now we all poo-poo it and be like, oh, that was so bad. No, I didn't like that.
No, the chase
was
cool.
High and mighty about it.
That's true. I mean, the chase was cool in 98. I loved it. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I loved the chase. I thought it was cool. But I'll also say that after a while, there was a certain amount of, remember chicks dig the long ball? There was a certain amount of sort of fatigue with all the home runs. And it was like,
It eventually got stupid.
Greg Vaughn hit 50 again. Great. Awesome. Right. You know, I mean, it was just
like all that music got stupid. Like, yeah. I enjoyed Limp Bizkit and Korn. We all did. But then you're going to try to shove head PE down my throat? Like, no thanks. I know I'm making very vague references.
Does Uncle Cracker count?
Please get out of here, too. Offshoots of Kid Rock. No one wants that. It got too far, just like with Brady Anderson and some of these other hacks that are now hitting 35, 40 home runs.
Yeah. I remember I went to a Red Sox game in Seattle in like 2003, and it was Jeff Zupan pitched, and like this was the height of, like, remember Brett Boone as a second baseman?
Yeah.
And Brett Boone hit like two home runs, one to the opposite field. And I remember I was sitting next to this nice Mariners fan. She was very talkative, very nice lady. And I was getting very frustrated. And she was like, how can you not like Brett Boone? You know, and she was totally, he has this great commercial here where he brushes his teeth and does all this other. And I just turned around and I was like, he's on steroids. Like, and it was like, you know, she was like, oh, you know, but it was like so obvious. I was like, this is so annoying. This guy that should be 165-pound second baseman is muscling opposite field home runs off Jeff Zupan, who, you know, that's not that hard to do because it's Jeff Zupan, but still, like, I was sitting there as a fan. I'm like, this is aggravating.
Yeah.
So there was a tipping point there.
Oh, for sure. But this, though, like, this is what's happened here with the sign stealing is an offshoot of all these nerds. I think it has to do with the analytics and these guys trying to outsmart each other and slowing the game down. So for me, baseball has pushed me away in recent years, this to me is worse. This is why I'm enjoying it. This is why I'm cackling. I'm like, yes, burn, baseball, burn. And go back to what it used to be. And that doesn't mean the steroid era. Just speed the damn game up and put the ball in play. That's all I'm looking for. And the sign-stealing thing is clearly an offshoot from that and analytics. And that I want to see go away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, doing away with like, sign-stealing is always going to be part of baseball. It's just now,
not to the extent where it's now just, you know, it's becoming like,
no, you're right.
Spy, I mean, versus spy. And we're using electronics devices and things like
that.
No,
it's like the old KGB, pretty much. It's like CIA level stuff. But I think to your point about it affecting the game, time of game last year was 3 hours and 10 minutes. Time of game for 9-inning games was 3 hours and 5 minutes. So those are both the highest in history. And I think the paranoia over teams stealing signs electronically and the arms race with everybody trying to build a better mousetrap, I think that has a lot to do with time of game.
All right, your calls on the baseball cheating scandal, how it affected the Red Sox, who you want the next Sox manager to be. We'll try to run through those before we get to the Sports Hub Celtic Show coming up at noon here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Now to the fallout growing from that World Series cheating scandal. The Red Sox firing manager Alex Cora, who helped both the Houston Astros and the Red Sox
cheat.
It started with Spygate.
That Musa Tomazzi made all that up.
And the stopping of those tapes.
Nobody can know about this.
Then the scheme with the balls got uncovered and spoiled.
Dr. Ian Seinfeld, ideal cast law.
Who cares? We got 6 rings.
Yeah, kiss the rings.
Is what the Pats fans say.
They hate us because they hate us.
Now it's the Red Sox with drama and broil.
The Sox issuing a joint statement with Cora announcing they have mutually agreed to part ways.
Skating away again here in Cheaterville.
You guys are making all this up. You're a couple of drama queens.
Alex Cora stealing signs so they draw walks.
And so that Jackie Bradley Jr., who sucks, can hit .272 with runners in scoring position.
Sox fans will claim that they're other teams to blame, but they know
we don't know nothing. F*** you.
That last title's a crock.
Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk.
Now, people enjoyed that this week on Felger and Mass, so I thought it was worth playing again.
As fun as it was to make, Chris, I have to say, part of it was painful because I can't express to you in words how much I truly despise Jimmy Buffett.
Well, I was going to say, you. I feel like you could be part of a Jimmy Buffett like tribute band. You're good.
Hey, considering the radio industry, you got Clear Channel blowing out 1,000 people this week. Who knows? It could happen here. God forbid it. Knock on wood that it doesn't. So I wouldn't be shocked. If it came to that and I had to make that money, Lord knows I would whore myself out to be the singer in the Jimmy Buffett tribute band. And every day I'd go home and look myself in the mirror and say, I want to die.
I mean, you got to get that money. For someone who hates it, you're just musically inclined and musically talented. But for someone who hates that guy, I mean, that was pretty good. It comes naturally and easily to you. I don't know if that speaks more about your talent or his lack thereof, but it came pretty easily.
Well, it's because I've heard that song so many times, countless times. I used to work as a bill collector for Sears in Salem. I'm sure it's still there. And they would
You're not dating yourself with any of this.
They would play the Muzak version of that song over and over and over and over and over again, and every day was the worst day of my life. With that, we'll go to Tom and Newton on the Red Sox cheating scandal. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hey, guys. So on this Red Sox scandal here, I mean, look, you know, I enjoy a good, you know, old-fashioned baseball game, you know, nice weather, good entertaining game, just like everybody else. But this data analytics, this whole thing now that's not only, you know, slowing the game down, but it's driving teams to, you know, engage in the types of things that they are. I mean, not only in baseball, but just across society. I mean, like every company now wants to, you know, use data and do all these things. It's ruining the game. And I think that one way, you know, it's just an idea. Maybe you can, you know, kill two birds with one stone is if you, you know, implemented some rule changes to speed up the game at the same time, wouldn't that also like invalidate the data that they're, you know, looking at to kind of do all these things? I mean, just an idea. What do you guys think? Thanks.
I'm not quite sure, honestly, I sort of understood like how speeding up the game is tied to sort of invalidating the data. I mean, I do think...
He just sounds like me in that he hates nerds.
Yeah.
Like, he's like analytics people that have like ruined sports.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, look, the way the game is played now, I mean, this started really back with Moneyball. It's work the count. A walk is as good as a hit. Try and get in counts where you can do damage. Remember that with Alcor, do damage.
To my career.
You know, launch angle, exit velocity, spin rate, all that stuff. I mean, it's all like legitimate, but I think if you can, I didn't really realize until this whole sign stealing scandal happened, just how much it was affecting like time of game. And now I go back and I think about some of those Red Sox Yankees games, and I think about some of the postseason games and the visits to the mound and the cycling through the signs. And it makes sense. Like, I think a lot of what's been tied to baseball and what's made it sort of laborious has to do with sort of the whole spy versus spy aspect. And if there's a way to take that away, MLB is exploring using technology to do that, whether it's some sort of earpiece, whether it's some sort of pad that the catcher has on his arm, whether it's lights embedded in the mound that only the pitcher can see that will a sequence will signal what the pitch is. I think that eventually they'll get to something that will make it harder to steal the signs besides just punishing people. And I think that will speed up the game. And look, some of the rules they have right now, Jim, they just have to enforce. Like, you know, they started out enforcing the guy stepping out of the box. Now it's like nobody cares. You know, there's nothing with keeping one foot in the box. And the pitch clock and all that stuff. If they enforce some of these rules, I think they can speed it up. This year, we know what's happening, right? The rule that's coming in with the pitchers where you have to face like at least three batters unless you're coming in for the end of an inning. So they're trying to do some of this stuff. But if they can wipe out the paranoia right now in baseball, I think that would really do a lot to speed up the game.
Ralph in Cranston, who do you want the next Red Sox manager to be?
Hey, guys, first of all, you know, this team is a mess, and anyone who doesn't think that we're going to have to go through this and Spygate again and everything else, and, you know, you see this team upside down. The Red Sox ownership looks like the worst ownership in baseball right now with so many things that have happened, violations and everything else. So now that it's upside down, to me, I think the easiest and maybe the smartest thing is, you know, you have a very strong, loyal support from the Latino community here. They're really good fans. They support this team well. What I would say to me, right off the bat, Tony Pena comes to mind because, you know, I've met him a few times. Chris, you probably have to. He's a nice guy. He knows his baseball.
Good candidate.
Is he still sharp and everything? But he could go in that dugout. And, you know, and he's no nonsense, too. I remember when he played here, and I met him when he played here. He's no nonsense. He's respected. Maybe something like that, not Veritek, something like that to go in there and say, look, we got to calm down. Look, the situation is here. But like I said, once again, and you know the Red Sox are worried about the Latino community, you know, they've really done well. They've brought in some really good players. You've got some young Latino players right now. You know, and the thing is that you need to calm the situation down in that dugout as much as you can. This team's going to get booed on the road. You have to tolerate that. Oh, yeah, that's brought on, and you're not going to be able to escape that. But like I said, I would like someone, like a Latino guy, come in there, calm the situation down. Tony Pena, to me, as soon as I heard it, I said, you know, he could be an ideal choice. I don't know how much baseball he's got left in him. Is he willing to do something like that, to take it on? And I'm not talking long-term. At least for this year, get something in there to just calm the storm a little bit.
Yeah, Ralph, you know, I like it. I hadn't even considered that. So Tony Pena, when you said the name initially, it's like, okay, that's a level-headed dude, but isn't he like a million? He's only 62.
Yeah, that's not that old.
And he was with the Yankees on their bench from 2006 to 2017, so it's not like he's that far removed from the game. Now 3 years. Still was part of the Red Sox organization in the early 90s. I don't hate it. Or even if it's just like a stopgap, like he said, for just a year. Tony Pena. All right, we'll put that on the board. But the Red Sox still need a manager. I'll give you an update of who the Mets are looking at here. We'll give you the latest in the headlines, and we'll get to the Celtics, who they've come back down to earth. Real quick. So we'll get to the Sports Hub Celtic Show right after the...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.